This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, December 21st, 2020. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for tuning in. From adults to children, the pandemic is leading more people to seek out mental health services. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek takes a look at the impact the health crisis is having on students who are learning virtually, in person, and every other way in between.
On several occasions throughout this pandemic, we turned to social media to find out how it's been impacting people's lives. This topic was no different, and so many of you were willing to share your experiences. We spoke with parents like Amy, who has two children, a son in sixth grade and a daughter in second.
My sixth grader is doing virtual learning through his school that I am facilitating here at home. My second grader is doing homeschool with the assistance of a very small homeschool pod.
Her son, Amy says, had already been struggling with a generalized anxiety disorder before the pandemic.
On top of the increased anxiety that I always notice in him, he's getting sad, and not just sad, but depressed. And my 11-year-old was talking about not wanting to live anymore. And that's not something I ever thought I would be dealing with.
Amy's son is doing better now, but while she'd like to send him back to school, her daughter has severe health issues that won't allow it.
She's had open heart surgeries. She has a genetic syndrome. I am locked down. We have not been anywhere since March. We're trying to be safe to protect her health.
We also spoke with Holly Woods and her second grade daughter, who she describes as outgoing and social.
So I feel like I've noticed her missing her friends, and she doesn't express.
I'm not missing them.
You're not missing them?
No.
Well, how would you explain it?
My normal life buried in a hole.
Your normal life buried in a hole.
Woods says she ran two small businesses that immediately dropped off at the start of the pandemic.
I was lucky and was able to get a PPP loan, and that kept me afloat until November. But currently, I mean, I had to ask for help with paying rent, and I can't consistently make enough to pay for all of my bills.
As a type 1 diabetic and breast cancer survivor, Woods is also at higher risk for complications from the coronavirus. So her daughter only attends school in person 2 days a week.
And so she is affected by my stress, because parents are under so much stress with the school. And I know that that's impacting her. She's been, honestly, I feel like really very mature and understanding for an 8-year-old. Pretty impressed with you, kiddo.
And although she's had support from a therapist for some time, Wood says her daughter isn't always willing to talk about how she's feeling.
She's a shover. Shoves that down.
In another part of Arkansas, Lindsay, who is also a mom to a daughter, can relate.
This is somebody who does not historically, and because of her age as well, identify her emotions and are able to express them accurately. When my daughter said, "I am depressed and I am lonely," I knew that was it.
Lindsay says her daughter's mental health and lack of interest in school is what drove her decision to leave the school district for a homeschool curriculum.
Homeschooling is working better, period, but it's working 10,000 times better than trying to public school under pandemic circumstances.
Lindsay has also plugged her daughter into different communities that host virtual events and introduced a small group of friends into their bubble.
One of her friends goes to a different school district and they have virtual Mondays. So every Monday we do a masked play date.
Caitlin Moses, whose daughter attends school virtually, has also limited who her family interacts with after she recently found out she was pregnant.
It's kind of like a frog in boiling water, I guess is how I would, you don't necessarily notice it at first, you know, they're acting normal, but then all of a sudden, you know, our daughter is really, really well behaved. She's always been a great kid, and, you know, but she was starting to throw little tantrums and, you know, just upset and wanting to spend time alone in her room, which she had never done before. And so her behavior had just started to change a little bit.
And although she's discussed the pandemic with her daughter, it can still be frustrating for her.
There have been several times where she's just expressed, you know, I'm tired of COVID. I hate it. I hate not getting to go anywhere. I want to go to Silver Dollar City. I want to go on vacation. I miss my friends. I want to be back in school. I mean, she's had several just sobbing, crying moments before she goes to sleep because she just And kids, you know, they always say it, and it's totally true that kids are resilient. But after a year almost of this, it still sometimes hits her like, I can't believe this is what my life has been like for the past 9 months, and I'm so tired of it.
Joy Carmine, who works as an elementary school counselor at a district south of Fort Smith, says she's also noticed an increase in unusual behavior from younger students.
The younger ones are having stress, and it's coming out in a strange behavior. We kind of have that all the time, but not like it's been more pronounced. I would say any of the kids that have any kind of problem, it's more pronounced, all of it.
She says the pandemic is also impacting students physically.
It's like they're in a fog. And a class I was in this morning, I see a lot of kids looking very sleepy and tired, and of course, more than normal.
Carmine's school district is one of nearly 20 that have lost a staff member to the coronavirus.
I checked on the other secretary who sits next to the empty chair, because they're not hiring till after the first of the year out of respect. She told me that today twice she just looked over there and tears came down. I mean, she didn't lose it, but we're all feeling those moments, which is natural.
Meanwhile, at a school district in the Arkansas River Valley, a high school teacher we're calling Emily says older children are struggling too, especially those students who are nearing graduation.
I don't have a student in high school personally, but I know that the anxiety and stress that these kids are feeling is off the charts. And part of that is because they are experiencing the pandemic through us and we are freaking out.
Some students are coping fine, but others, Emily says, have been hard to reach.
What am I not doing for these kids that they're not getting it? And, you know, for me, it has come back to relationship building, which is the core of successful learning and teaching. And I've had to constantly refocus, you know, my attention. I need to ask these kids, how are you doing? What's going on? You know, what's going on in your home life? Are you working? Like, how can I help you in this area first, which is the social emotional learning piece? Because if we don't have that, the learning doesn't even happen.
Emily attributes the lack of engagement to students being unprepared for the amount of technology they'd be using this year, as well as some decisions made by the school district when schools shut down in March.
In the springtime, they froze grades and stuff kind of didn't matter, you know, and so that kind of set us up for a little bit of failure here in the fall. Once you have it one way, it's really hard to switch people to the harder way.
Which is why she adds she's changed the expectations she has for her students, at least for the duration of the pandemic.
I mean, that's all it is. It's just a hoop you have to jump through. At this stage in the game, I'm not grading these kids on, are you a great artist? Do you have these art skills? Do you have this technique down? It's really, are you able to jump through this hoop that we have presented for you so that you can get to the next step?
Rita Cruz Collins, who is a licensed clinical social worker and a mom, says her son is also catching up on schoolwork after struggling with it earlier in the year.
Part of the struggle has been I've put a lot of it in his court because he's older, but then there were some struggles and he didn't want to add stress to it. So he didn't talk about the struggles. And so now we are playing crazy catch up.
Cruz Collins has been seeing both teachers and students as clients during the pandemic. And she says both groups are suffering different levels of anxiety and depression.
I have never made so many referrals for medication in my entire career as I currently am right now.
She says a lot of that is related to the uncertainty the pandemic and other major events like the racial justice protests and presidential election are causing in people's everyday lives.
So we find this normal, but then there's a plot twist. And then we find the normal again, and then there's a plot twist. And it's like you can never get to the normal because things are always changing.
Like Cruz Collins, therapist and mom Amber Jackson says she's also noticed increased interest in people seeking out mental health services.
You know, 10 plus calls per week for new clients, that's not normal.
Since her husband is a teacher, Jackson says they decided to limit their chances for exposure to COVID-19 by keeping her son at home, which has impacted some of his grades.
That first couple of weeks, we were like, yeah, we got this. And then third, fourth week, it was like, oh, we don't got this.
Jackson says right now is a good time to detach from our normal attachments to identity and achievement.
So a lot of, you know, what I've been working with my children and myself, right? Because we're all struggling with like, I'm no longer able to do this thing, which is where I would get, you know, part of my identity met. So being able to sort of, you know, reframe for children, you know, like this is, you know, because you didn't get, you're behind 10 assignments. What does that say about you? Does that mean that you're lazy, right? Does that mean that you don't care? And so we have to reframe that.
And while the pandemic will abate eventually, Vicki Collett, an associate professor in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Arkansas, is concerned about its lasting impacts.
For adolescents, social connection is their main way of learning. Like that is their important trajectory for development. And so to be denied that has really significant implications for their, not only their social emotional learning, but also their academic learning and just their identity formation as well.
Collett says the changes made in classrooms to create a safer environment for students and staff are also having an impact on learning, as social distancing, masks, and plexiglass dividers are minimizing opportunities for differentiated instruction.
So I'm concerned about the implications of those changes, the long-term implications. I don't think this is something that's going to be fixed by the end of 2021, if you could think of, you know, fixing such a thing.
Everyone we spoke with was in agreement that dealing with a mental health issue starts with talking about it. Psychologist Jean Deveni says the Stay Positive Arkansas Crisis Counseling Program aims to make that more accessible.
So this is a statewide crisis counseling program. It's facilitated through the Arkansas Department of Human Services. And together they have partnered with, I believe, 14 or 15 agencies across the state. And our goal is to provide free, anonymous emotional support for all Arkansans affected by the pandemic, which is pretty much all of us at this point. And if anyone needs to get connected to local resources or assistance, we are here to provide guidance as well.
To get assistance through the Stay Positive Arkansas Crisis Counseling Program, you can go to their website at staypositivearkansas.com or call the statewide phone number 833-993-2382. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
Another note for your Monday. Though Congress has yet to vote on the latest pandemic stimulus package, it does include something tens of thousands of Pacific Islanders have been advocating for 25 years, the restoration of Medicaid benefits to Compact of Free Association migrants, which includes people from the Marshall Islands. The policy change revises a drafting mistake in the 1996 Welfare Reform Bill that barred islanders, like those living in Northwest Arkansas, from the program. We'll have much more on what this means for the local Marshallese community on an Ozarks at Large after the new year.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by Park Lane Family Dental, offering dental wellness with an emphasis on restorative and cosmetic dentistry. Located in the area for more than 30 years with offices in Fort Smith and Rogers, and now in Springdale. Park Lane follows CDC recommended protocol for COVID prevention. ParkLaneDental.com for information or to schedule an appointment. KUAF is supported by Therapods Float Spa, offering self-care for mind, body, and hair. Located in Uptown Fayetteville, Therapods has flotation tanks, massage, hair care, and the Lucia No. 3 meditation lamp following COVID safety guidelines. 790-2448 or theropods.com for information.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me via Zoom from Roots HQ on the Fayetteville Square is Brian Hembree, one of the organizers of the annual Fayetteville Roots Festival. Brian, welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Thanks, Kyle. It's good to see you in the interweb.
Let's catch up, because you and I talked, you, Bernice, and I think, talked back in April, when we started playing some of the Roots songs on every daily edition of Ozarks at Large. One thing that we said then is, well, there's more than 80 performances here. Hopefully, we don't have to play them all in the absence of live music. We did play them all, didn't we?
We did. And that is exactly what we said. And I think about two conversations early. We met in middle of March, mm-hmm. and we talked about what was happening to the music, you know, world at that moment. And we thought maybe a month, yeah. maybe we'll get back to some normalcy. And obviously 9 months later, that's not true. And then a few weeks later, we talked about this project, you know, the Roots Archives, A Song a Day on Ozarks at Large. And even at that moment, to your point, I think we thought we had so many songs, we wouldn't ever get through all of them. We did. And we actually went two times through the cycle. And that's pretty sobering to think about the idea that, you know, you all, Ozarks at Large, KUAF, that, you know, have had such a great track record of putting brand new live music on the radio on a weekly, sometimes daily basis, mm-hmm. you know, weren't able to do that. And that breaks my heart. And I am happy that we were able to put recorded live music on the radio via the Roots Archives for certain.
So after we went through that collection twice and added a few new songs, newly released songs along the way, we kind of came to this mutual decision, okay, we've done this, what's next? And so we kind of had an idea session.
Yeah, you know, Kyle, first off, we love Fayetteville Roots and Ozarks at Large and KUF partnership. You all have been such a longtime supporter of what we do and been a part of the process of building Roots over the years with us, and we appreciate that. And so this feels like such a natural fit. And I would say that this is a part of a 10-year brainstorm, right, you know, about how you know, Ozarks at Large, KUF, and Roots can continue to work together. But specifically to what's next for Roots Archives, you know, we want to continue to, you know, have a presence and be a part of what you all do, shining a light on, you know, local music, regional music, and music in general. We feel like that's definitely something that enriches our community. And so we're happy to be a part, and we want to do whatever we can. That being said, you know, I don't know how long this will go. And, you know, we recorded over 80 songs, to your point, you know, over the last 5 years. But I start thinking about not just looking back, but looking forward. I start thinking about some of the conversations that we've had with artists around the recording of those songs, the things that at the time didn't get recorded per se, you know, those 10-minute conversations when the mics are going up,
right.
when you chat about life and you chat about life on the road and you chat about where that artist is headed with their music. And so, you know, I'm getting excited about 2021 with a possibility to have a Roots component on the radio with you that will be one part new music from artists, because artists are creating still, even though live events are kind of on hold, they're still creating. And I think shining a light on that new music is massively important. And we have a great network of musical family via the Roots over the last decade. And I know that they would love to have an outlet here in Northwest Arkansas for that new music. But I also think about those conversations. And Bernice and I have been working on some podcast projects over the last year in partnership with Oxford American. But we have more conversations than we can even put into a podcast, and we want to ask more questions of artists and talk and reach out more to them. And so I see it as one part, you know, conversation about the current state of music. And then a third part, just having the chance always to look back at some of the Roots Archives, because there's more than just the 80 songs. We haven't dipped into the music that was recorded live on the stage,
right?
We've got a ton of music that was recorded live on stage, albeit that's multi-track. And for anyone listening, you know, a band might have 22 tracks that they're presenting, and all of that needs to be mixed. And so, you know, I don't know if that's clear, but I see it as like a three-legged stool of Roots, maybe weekly in partnership with Ozarks at Large.
And I also want to ask you, I know that you do talk to musicians, those who come in for the Roots Festival, those who play locally. And I'm wondering what kind of conversations you've had with musicians through the Meals program that Roots Festival and all the partners are operating. Over the last 9+ months, what have those conversations been like?
Yeah, Kyle, that ongoing conversation is so important to me. And I think to the, you know, the reason why I love music. You know, obviously I listen to music and you know, am intrigued by the song, but I'm also equally intrigued by the person and the story behind that song. And so, you know, if you think about our time with at Roots Festival over the years, Kyle, it's being backstage chatting with an artist, or, you know, finding out where they're headed or what they're up to or what they're thinking that really lights me up. And, you know, I've been doing that, and Bernice has been doing that. We've been doing that at the car side window over these last 9 months at the Meals program. And it's really one of the things that's keeping me going. And I feel like is so important. It's that 5 minutes we get to just chat through the car window with an artist and find out what's happening. You know, there've been some sobering moments, you know, artists talking about, you know, how COVID has impacted one of their family members, artists that have had COVID and recovered, artists that were trying to be as safe as possible and either, you know, take a gig here or there or do some studio work, and COVID impacted that work. It's been tough, but it's also been the light, you know, that's keeping the light on. It's the one place where the music community is still gathering of sorts. And I'm really thankful for that. We've had artists talk about, the Meals program specifically, how it helps them to continue to feel like they're an artist. You know, right. One of the things that we thought about really early on is, you know, when you are playing gigs, at least one of those gigs a week is probably going to buy you dinner, you know, and you forget how important that is. Just that meal that someone said, "Hey, I want to do this for you." That Friday night gig where someone says, "Here's $20, go buy barbecue," or yeah, whatever it may be, you know, and that component artists have talked about, and you know, just knowing that there's a place each week that they can count on that. In the same way that when we had, you know, live events where they knew at least each week there was going to be a hearty meal that they could count on.
And we should point out, you mentioned the term, and I like it, music community, because it's not just the women and men who sing and play guitars. It's also the folks who put the lights on the stage and mix the sound. They're just as affected.
That's right. It really is an entire community. We've had, you know, bartenders, bar backs, stagehands, photographers, music photographers. You know, we've had... you know, the actual musicians that you would identify and go, "Hey, I know that musician," you know, because I've seen them play, you know, over the years so many times. It truly is a music community. And that's important because if you think about what all it takes to put a front person, a front lady out on the stage, you know, you've got the band behind her, you've got the sound crew running the sound, you've got the team at the venue that sold the tickets and promoted the show, you've got the folks at the bar, you know, selling drinks, you've got the fans. The music community is so broad, and we need to nurture that entire community if we're going to get to the other side of this and you know, be able to have live music in a meaningful way again.
Brian Hembree is one of the co-founders of the Fayetteville Roots Festival. You can learn more about their efforts to help musicians at FayettevilleRoots.org. Well, you can probably guess what that is. School children singing a Christmas carol. That's how we start off our final trip through the Pryor Center archives for 2020. Randy Dixon is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History, and he's with me on the phone. Randy, how are you?
Great. Happy holidays, Kyle.
Happy holidays. Happy holidays to you as well. I'm going to guess that was Channel 7 at a school performance that we just heard?
Yes, I remember as a child, you know, during the season, there was a constant flow of school buses out in front of the Capitol, and classes from all over the state would come, and it was like clockwork. Kelly Bryant, Secretary of State, used to have... them routed through, and there was constant singing by elementary and junior high school kids in the rotunda of the state capitol around the big Christmas tree.
Well, perfect for this.
Quite a memory.
Yeah, perfect for this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've set the table. What else are we going to hear about this time of season out of the archives?
Well, I just wanted to dig in and find a few things that were Christmas or holiday related. And the first thing I came across was from 1972. And Little Rock used to have a downtown parade every year that was a big undertaking. It was carried live by KATV, multiple cameras. It was like a mini version of the Macy's Day Parade. I remember one year the Jackson 5 was actually in the parade. They happened to be in town for a concert, and they got on a double-decker bus and went through downtown Little Rock.
Whoa!
And that was kind of a neat thing as a kid. But a local businessman, Bernard Mann, used to kind of coordinate these things. And in 1972, he was making the announcement of the new one, and even mentions the fact that there's going to be a Macy's parade balloon included in that year's parade.
The parade lasts an hour and a half, and there's plenty to see during that time. Last year, we estimated approximately 75,000 people saw the parade in person. An even larger crowd is expected this year. The parade route is 10 blocks long. It starts at Markham, starts at 10th and goes down to Markham on Main Street. So there's plenty of good places to view it from. And of course, the parade is for children, but we believe that all of the adults who saw it last year will enjoy it as much as the kids. We have spent almost a year preparing the parade, and many of the mistakes that we made last year, our first year, have been ironed out, so we expect an absolutely exciting parade this year.
All right, two things I want to bring up here. One, if I want to have someone announcing what's going to be in a Christmas parade, I want it to be that man, Bernard Mann. That is the perfect 1972 Christmas parade voice for me. I don't know why, but I just love the way
he really was.
Wasn't yes.
It was quite nostalgic.
Yes, I love the way he spoke. Secondly, what were the mistakes in the first year parade that he said have been ironed out, I wonder?
Well, you know, I'm not really sure. I need to go back and look into that. But something obviously happened.
Yes.
Or multiple things happened.
Okay. Next cut. Now, you've talked about M.M. Cone before. I think people in Central Arkansas are probably familiar with it. I did not grow up in Central Arkansas. We had Ben Franklin and Sterling's. Tell me about M.M. Cone.
Well, M.M. Cone was more like a Dillard's.
Ah.
They were, the rivalry you've always heard about between Macy's and Gimbel's. It was Dillard's and M.M. Cone.
Hmm.
And they were both department stores that, I guess, were considered higher end. And so we would always go to one of those vendors or businesses to talk about, you know, an outlook on holiday sales. And Dan Phillips, who was the executive for M.M. Cone at the time, he was talking up that 71 would be a really good year.
The rate of buying is excellent. I think that there'll be no one in town who won't have the biggest Christmas season that they've ever had by far. I think Little Rock's business has been excellent, and right up to the minute, every indication is that we're having somewhere between an excellent and a boom month this December.
Boy, now that is some optimism. I mean, he's ready.
Yeah.
He's ready for the cash registers to ring. Oh,
cha-ching. Yeah.
Now, we're about to hear something else that we first heard several months ago when we were going just kind of over a month, but it was so good, and it fits so well with this time of year, we're going to hear it again.
Yes. Yeah, this is a little classic from a reporter named Pam Martin, and it's, as you can tell, it was a bit dated because this was recorded in 1975, but she talks about the prices of toys that Christmas season.
They still sell the same toys. They just cost a little more. This pea shooter, every little boy's best friend, is still a nickel. But the peas that go with it have gone up. They're 10 cents or 15 cents, depending on where you buy it. Marbles used to sell for 10 or 15 cents. They're now 30. And these little toy cars are 30 cents, too. They used to sell for a nickel or a dime. Paddle balls, the source of many hours of entertainment on long summer afternoons, that's if you could do it, they're now 30 cents. And yo-yos cost 25 cents. I can remember when they were a nickel. It just costs a little more to have fun these days. This is Pam Martin, reporting for News Scene 7.
I mentioned this when we played this first in the summer. I'm going to mention it again. You tell me that's from 1975. It sounds much more like 1955 to me when you're talking about the toys.
It does. The pea shooters,
yes.
The yo-yos. Yeah, it seems a lot older than that, but I guess, you know, that's still what kids were playing with. We kids, I suppose.
Hey, well, yeah, good point.
I was a kid then.
So was I. I did not have a pea shooter, though.
No, I didn't either. Put your eye out.
Exactly. And that Pam Martin report sounds like it should be of that era, you know, of the mm-hmm. Christmas Story era. It really does. Okay, a bit earlier we heard Dan Phillips from M.M. Cohn, and he had this one take on Christmas, 1971. Here's Governor Dale Bumpers with, also from 1971, with a different take. What do we hear the governor saying?
Well, this is an address to the state, which I could not find any other governors in the archive that did this, but for some reason he chose to give an address, and I think it was only on KATV to the people of the state that KATV aired on Christmas Day, and you can tell it really reflects the kind of tough times of 1971.
On this Christmas Day, there's still much fighting and killing in other sections of the world. And on this Christmas Day in our own country, we can reflect and realize that we have become increasingly tolerant of hate and violence. And we've come to accept that as natural and tranquility as unnatural. On this Christmas Day, I hope you will stop and reflect on how pleasant peace and tranquility can be, how happy it is to be with your loved ones and be together. And then I hope you will take a vow that in the coming year you'll be less tolerant of hate, less tolerant of prejudice, more concerned for the public welfare and for your neighbor. I want to wish all of you a very Merry Christmas and a happy, peaceful New Year. Thank you.
Governor Dale Bumpers addressing the state in 1971 on Christmas Day. We're going to end with something that I believe was never on television. Is this kind of
this is a bonus cut thing that's very near and dear to my heart. Back when I was at KATV for about 10 or 12 years, rather than sending out Christmas cards, I would make Christmas CDs, and it would have, you know, of course, Christmas music. And then I sort of got bored with it and decided to add other elements, oddities and audio things. Maybe next year I can do a best of that has some, you know, Beatles wishing Merry Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Their old fan albums and things like that. But I have quite a personal archive of Christmas music and oddities and things like that. But this is from one of the years, I believe it was 2003. I talked to the late, great voice of the Razorbacks, Paul Eales, into going into the audio booth with me and record The Night Before Christmas. And we went into the booth, and of course he did it in one take.
Of course.
As only Paul could do. And then I put a little music to it and closed out the CD that year. And I think it's very appropriate to maybe end the show with Paul and The Night Before Christmas.
And so this is, I guess, then the broadcast premiere of this performance?
Yes, it would be.
All right. Well, we'll let Paul end it. I will tell you before we do that it has been a great pleasure having you on the show in 2020. We started it earlier this year. We're going to keep doing this in 2021, Randy.
I'd love to. It's been a blast.
Well, happy holidays. Thank you so much. And I do know that we're going to be talking about food when we return on Monday, January 4th.
certainly. Why not?
All right. Happy holidays, Randy. Let's let Paul Eales take us out.
The house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of a new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and eight tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a minute it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen. On Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop, the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys, and you guessed it, St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my hand and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, oh, how they twinkled. His dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all of the stockings. Then he turned with a jerk and laying a finger aside his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
This is Ozarks at Large. As we come to the end of 2020, a few Northwest Arkansas musicians are releasing some holiday cheer for our Christmas present. From there, Christmas past. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Anthony Ball about recordings he and musical friends have released, music recorded over the past few years. But first, guitarist Roby Pantol from Rogers with a CD titled Acoustic Christmas that was captured in his home studio with friend Ron Pennington accompanying on mandolin. It was recorded in 2002.
A little slow on the release on this one. This was recorded, like I say, locally, and with really didn't have internet distribution back in the day. We didn't have CD Baby, didn't have self-distribution. We didn't have all those things. So we just kind of sat unpublished, and we gave it to family and friends, and everyone asked for it every year. And he said, "Hey, where can I get copies of it?" And you know, we bootleg. I think I made three versions, you know, printed out on my own old computer. You know, this is back in the day, pre all this stuff we have now. And I always knew it was a good recording, very special. We did it over a few nights in my studio, my house, and it was very, very spiritual. I remember we prayed before each session, and that we would do it would be the right thing to play. It was very special, and I don't think we could ever replicate that today. Things are more complicated, and I don't know, harder to get together. But this was, went back and listened to it, and it's just a really, really special, innocent time of two musicians getting together and doing what they love. Be a bestseller. We did it just where people could listen to it and enjoy Christmas, because we used to do a lot of these stuff at our church back in the day. Ron and I were the musicians that would do the communion every week songs, and we had the latitude to play whatever we want to. So it was unrehearsed. So it was a small church, and so it was like we got to play a lot of acoustic music with Ron and myself with guitar and mandolin, and we got pretty good at just doing stuff on the spot and, you know, arrangements right there. You take melody, I'll take melody, harmony, boom, go. I think this was probably after we'd done a pretty heavy Christmas tune cycling through, and we got them under our fingers pretty well. And we said, well, let's just record this.
Mentioned it was a simpler time in 2002 when you recorded this. What was the setup? How much do you remember of the setup for the recording of these acoustic performances 18 years ago?
Oh, I remember exactly. It was in my little studio, which was basically a room. And it was we had two microphones, one in front of him, one in front of me, live. And very simple. It was one of those, Roland 16-track, 24-bit things, that pretty high-tech at the time. And, you know, I did a pretty good job getting it recorded, you know, with no mess-ups. And it was just very intimate. Ron was probably 3 feet in front of me, and we were right there, and... But just what we do, we play music all the time, so it felt very natural. It wasn't very, also being in a home studio was not very stressful.
Someone hears this conversation and they want this, Robbie. What can they do?
Well, it's a little late. I do apologize that for internet stuff. We do have some copies. I have some copies, and Ron Pinkton have copies. If you need it, you've got to have it. We can arrange it. Just have them get a hold of me or Ron on Facebook. And I'm Roby Pantol and Ron Pinkton. That will each have copies, and we can get them to you locally. Hopefully, because mailing's probably not going to be a good idea right now.
Acoustic Christmas from Roby Pantol, guitar, Ron Pennington, mandolin. We spoke with Roby late last week. Anthony Ball is a Northwest Arkansas musician who has been playing Christmas music for a long time, both for other people and for himself. And this year, he's released a couple of CDs of music recorded over the past few years.
Mm-hmm. love holiday music. So I'm just a holiday music lover. So I'm visualizing that kind of stuff when I'm playing, you know. And man, I don't know what, like when we got in the studio, like take for instance the Christmas song, you know, the saxophone and stuff like that. When you're in the upright bass, the grand piano, when you put all that together, you know, that already gives you that kind of hot chocolate, you know, in your PJs kind of vibe already. The brushes, you know, it's a really, really intimate, you know, track. You got Reggie James on piano. He plays for Funk Factory. These records, this is two records, Have a Smooth Man Christmas, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And what I did, I took all the musicians that we work with throughout the year, and we jumble everybody up into different configurations. So Reggie James from Funk Factory. You got Garrett Jones. He plays with Crusade, my jazz group. And you have Justin Hamby. He's a gospel saxophonist that I've worked with. He's out of Pine Bluff, but he's been here for years now, and we always kind of link up around Christmas time and do some fun stuff or whatever. So he's been a brother for a long time, and myself on drums. When you talk about the Christmas cheer, you know, like I always think about community. I think about family. I think about giving back. You know, like every year we do a Christmas show where we pick a charity throughout the community that's doing good work that we want to educate our listeners about. You know, and we raise money. This year we're raising money for single parents, scholarship fund. So when you talk about Christmas cheer, it just brings up all those emotions and all those feelings, you know. And I'm a big family and community guy. So, you know, like that equals holiday all together, you know. I have a lot of friends that I care dear about, and just to be frank, man, and be transparent, we've lost family and friends this year. You know, a lot of friends have been sick. You know, of course, like when this first all started, you know, it was kind of like, it's just certain people that's going to catch this. It's not going to happen to us, you know. And you know, I come from West Memphis. It's probably predominantly black area, you know. And a lot of the black community was saying, you know, it's not happening to us. It's happening on the other side of the tracks. So it became real for a lot of people. And even now, you know, like going through the holiday season is tough because this is the time when you bring everybody together, you know, and especially this year because of everything that's happened. We need that togetherness and that unity.
Anthony, if you and I talk a year from now and 2021 has gone, what would you like to have happened in the next 12 months?
Man, the easy question, the easy answer is I want to have a sold out building full of people that's safe and we can do so, you know. But that's the main thing that I yearn for right now.
Anthony Ball talking to us last week via Zoom about Have a Smooth Man Christmas Volume 1 and Have a Smooth Man Christmas Volume 2. You can find out more at CD Baby, YouTube, or put Have a Smooth Man Christmas into a search engine. This is Ozarks at Large. Merry Christmas. And happy holidays from Ozarks at Large.
I am Aria Kagan, and I am a chef instructor of Brightwater in Bentonville, Arkansas. And when I was in culinary school a gazillion years ago, I was introduced to a chef, not personally, but through her cookbooks, and her name is Alice Waters. And one of the recipes my cousin gave me, and it's become a staple, which is it sounds very, you know, modest, a cranberry upside down cake. But the name, I feel like, doesn't do it justice because it's just such a delicious, homey, comforting, warm, flavorful cake that this time of year definitely lends itself flavor-wise to the holidays. So I'll tell you how it's made. It's a very simple cake to make. What you start out by doing is taking butter and brown sugar, and you warm that in a pan. So the sugar begins to melt and the butter begins to bubble a little bit. And you'll take that butter and brown sugar and you'll pour it into a 9-inch round pan. And then you'll add cranberries. I like to use fresh cranberries, and you can get them frozen, great, in the store. So you take, and it's a good amount. It's like almost 3 cups of fresh cranberries, and you pour that into the pan, and then a 1/4 cup of orange juice. And what that does is, as the cake begins to cook, the cranberries release its juices and develops this really yummy bottom, which then will become the top of the cake. Then you get started on the actual batter, which is a pretty simple cake batter. You're creaming butter and sugar together. And this is a really important part, to really cream the butter and sugar together so you get that really beautiful light color. Then you're gonna add your dry ingredients and you'll mix those together. Those will be all-purpose flour and baking powder and salt. You'll also take 2 eggs and separate them. You'll put the whites to the side, and then you have your butter and sugar that have been whipping really nicely. You add a little bit of fresh, either vanilla extract, or if you have a vanilla bean, you can add 1/4 bit of your vanilla bean seeds. Then you're going to add your egg yolks 1 at a time, and that's going to add this really beautiful denseness. And then you'll scrape the sides down, and then you'll start incorporating your dry ingredients. And then you'll also have 1/2 cup of whole milk. So you'll add about 1/2 of your dry ingredients, and you'll mix, 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 mix. Then you'll add 1/2 of your milk, mix, 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 mix. And then you'll add the last 1/2 of your flour, mix that together, and then 1/2 of your milk, and mix that together. Then you'll take your egg whites that you put aside, your 2 egg whites, and you'll whip those together with a little bit of cream of tartar. And then we fold in the egg whites into the batter, and this really adds a really nice lightness to your cake. And then you'll take that beautiful, light, creamy batter, and you'll add it to the top of your cranberries, and you'll bake that in the oven at 350 for about 50 to 60 minutes. You'll pull it out of the oven and let it cool for about 15 minutes. And then you'll put a plate on top and you'll flip your cranberry upside down cake over, and you'll take the pan off and you'll see this beautiful, like, glistening red top. And that's served delicious, warm, right like that, or a scoop of vanilla ice cream, which I'll never refuse. And you have a beautiful, all around, incredible cake.
Classes at Brightwater start January 11th. You can learn more at brightwater.org. This is 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville. Contributors today included Susanna Sitek, Timothy Dennis produced our show at his home studio in downtown Fayetteville. This is our last new show of 2020. Special holiday shows coming up the rest of this week. We'll be back with the new Ozarks at Large Monday, January 4th. Be well.